The information discussed by the host and guests on this talk show is meant to be informational only. Listening or calling in to ask questions for our guests does not create a patient-doctor relationship. Rely on your own doctor or healthcare provider's medical advice to treat or diagnose any conditions you may have. Nothing discussed on this talk show is meant to replace your doctor's medical advice. You should never stop your current medical treatments or delay getting medical treatment because of anything presented in this program. If you want more information about a medical condition or treatment discussed on this program, talk to your doctor.
It's time for Health Check with Heidi Godman, a daily dose of health and wellness information. Call or text Heidi your questions at 373-1220. That's 373-1220. And now here's Heidi Godman.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Health Check. I'm Heidi Godman. So glad you are with us today. Hope you're doing well. We have a very interesting program for you today. In a little bit, it'll be time for our weekly Brain Boost, and we'll be speaking with neurologist Dean Sutherland about a new study regarding Parkinson's disease. And the study concludes that this disease may begin in the gut, and therefore protection against Parkinson's disease may also begin in the gut. You know, studies are kind of tricky because studies are sort of like an argument that someone is making. It's hard to prove that any findings of a study is absolutely the way something is. But this is very interesting and compelling, so we'll be speaking with Dean about that in a little bit. But we are going to start today by talking all about dermatology and pediatric dermatology, to be specific. So do you have any children or grandchildren, nieces or nephews, and you're a little concerned about their skin? How much sun is okay for them to get? You know, they go off to school and here we are in Florida, they're playing outside in the beautiful sunny weather. Should they be wearing a sunscreen? How much sunscreen? What kind of sunscreen? And then what if they have anything that looks suspicious growing on them? Is it possible that children can have skin cancer or any suspicious growths even after, you know, just a few years being exposed to the sun instead of a lifetime? We are going to find out. My guest is Dr. Manjula Jegasothy. She is an aesthetic dermatologist and the founder of the Miami Skin Institute. Hi, Manjula.
Hello, Heidi. Thank you for having me back on your show.
Hi, it's great to talk to you. So pediatric dermatology, I mean, this is something that you wouldn't necessarily think is a big problem among children.
Actually, it's funny because as soon as I turn my practice into all aesthetics, I mostly just take care of my friends' kids when they have something come up. But you'd be amazed. Something comes up almost weekly.
Really? So there are a lot of there are a lot of issues with children. Now, are kids having the same types of skin issues, suspicious-looking skin issues as adults?
No, and so that's what why I wanted to have this segment, is because I think parents worry a lot and grandparents worry a lot about something new that's growing on their child or grandchild's skin. And I wanted to, first of all, allay their fears that, for the most part, most of the things that children get are virus-related on the skin. So anything that looks like a new skin-colored bump or even a red, mild red rash, even something that's even moderate red on the hands and feet, all of those are different types of viruses, and generally the pediatrician can take care of those very successfully.
Okay, so different types of viruses.
Yes, so the common wart is a virus. The thing we call molluscum, which are those little pink bumps or skin-colored bumps that come up in clusters on the hands and feet or the knees. And children tend to pick and scrape at them. Their nails aren't so clean and they can get infected. That's another kind of virus that can then get impetigo, which is a staph bacterial infection. It sounds very serious, but you know, with a little topical antibiotic, it's fine. And then the other kinds of viruses are, you know, very transient, related to different kinds of flu-type viruses and things that don't generally, cause serious side effects. However, I think that if your child has a diffuse red rash from head to toe, it's a good idea to take them into the doctor.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you know when a few bumps might be a virus or something more serious? How do you know when to go to the doctor?
Well, anything that's been sort of there that, you know, you just noticed, but you know, if your child is verbal, then, you know, ask them how long they've had it. And if they can't tell you, then, you know, I would watch it for about a week or so if it's just a solitary or a few bumps. But if it's a widespread diffuse rash, it should be seen within 24 hours.
Okay. So rashes or something like that might be the symptom, but a virus might be really what's behind it. So then what are some of the other conditions that kids can get on their skin?
Okay, so basically, if something is red, go to the doctor in the next 24 hours. If something is black, it could be something, a very rare form of childhood skin cancer, childhood melanoma, something like that. But if something is skin colored or brown or gray, those are things that can wait. The other main type of thing, like you said, that they can get other than viruses are these very rare skin cancers, which, again, are not so common. But I do think it's very important that people realize that children should be sunscreened for recess in Florida every day. Many nurses, school nurses, unfortunately, and schools themselves have policies that sunscreen is a medication. So, you know, for time constraints, they can't put sunscreen on every child before recess. And also, you know, for the stability reasons, I think it's a good idea if you sunscreen your child every morning, after, you know, before you send them to school.
Okay, so go ahead and make sure that your child is covered. What kind of sunscreen should we be using?
My favorite one that's over-the-counter and widely sold is the Blue Lizard Baby. It's a nice, very soothing formulation. It's not too greasy and doesn't smell bad, so they tend to like it. And it's available in CVS, Walmart, and most convenience stores.
And is there a particular SPF that we should be looking for? I know it should be broad spectrum.
Yes, so broad spectrum means that it's based on zinc or titanium. Not many kids are willing to actually wear zinc or titanium all day at school, so that's why these micronized formulations of zinc or titanium, such as Blue Lizard Baby. There's Neutrogena has a child form, and even there's another form for acne-prone adults called Neutrogena Dry, which I like a lot. And any one of them, they're all SPF 30, and they're adequate for example, recess or lunchtime.
Okay. All right. Terrific. And then what about the suspicious growths? I mean, what did they look like on a child versus an adult?
Okay, so on a child, it can be confusing because they can have a birthmark or something brown or even dark brown that seems to be growing rather rapidly, but it's actually just growing with the child. So, you know, if you notice something that's growing rapidly, please take them to see the pediatric dermatologist. But, and that's another thing, nowadays, most of us are subspecialized. So there are, in bigger cities, there are only a few people who actually, few dermatologists who actually see kids. And so it's worth it to just take them to the specialist rather than taking them to your dermatologist. And for the most part, they'll tell you it's a mole that's just growing rapidly because your child is growing rapidly. If it seems to be suddenly changing color, like going from blue to red or from red to blue or becoming black or getting ulcerated where there's a little ulcer in it or if it starts bleeding, apart from your child scratching it, just it starts spontaneously bleeding, those are all bad things. And so that should be seen by the pediatric dermatologist and biopsied also as soon as possible.
But is that very common among children, pediatric skin cancer?
Very rare.
It's
very
rare. Okay. And isn't it true that children have a better chance at fighting skin cancer than adults? Isn't there something about that?
Well, the DNA in kids' cells all over their body is just, it has better repair mechanisms than adults. But these repair mechanisms can be altered throughout childhood and therefore make the person more susceptible to skin cancer later if they're not sunscreened properly and not given the proper antioxidants in childhood. That's why sunscreening them daily and then giving them a diet that's rich in antioxidants is important as their children because it improves their repair mechanisms throughout life.
And then what kind of a a healthy skin buildup or protection are we giving kids when we've been protecting them their whole childhood and teenage years? How does that prepare them for adulthood versus kids who were unprotected as children going into adulthood and being exposed to the sun?
The whole concept of the base tan is just completely urban legend. It's a myth. There's no such thing as a safe base tan. I think people do that so that they don't go on a trip and get a sunburn. But really what they should be doing is is protecting themselves at all times. There's no tan is a good tan.
Right. I guess I was getting to the point of if you are protecting your child all of his life and teenage years, then he won't have that damaged skin that he might have if you hadn't been doing that. I mean, and I guess that's my question, too. If a child has been exposed for 20 years, then heads into adulthood, you know, are the risks higher of that unexposed skin are the risks higher of damage?
Absolutely. We have, now thousands of studies of kids who are, children of fishermen or people that had occupations outdoors for over, the last 100 years. And those people are definitely, we have nice studies actually of people that have lived in the Keys, for example, all their lives, who have a much higher propensity to skin cancer than other people who spent their days entirely in school.
Sure. All right. Or maybe in the north, where it's cold and gray in the winter. All right, well, we are going to continue speaking with Dr. Manjula Jagasothy, but we need to take a quick break. Everybody, please stick around. This is Health Check with Heidi Godman on WSRQ. We'll be right back.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes.
The sun is out, the kids are playing. It's all fun and games until someone gets hurt or sick and needs urgent medical care. Sarasota Memorial Hospital's 5 urgent care centers are staffed with board-certified emergency and family medical physicians, so you can count on the best care fast. The right doctors right away at Sarasota Memorial Urgent Care Centers. Open daily 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. For locations, visit smh.com/urgent care.
Doctors Hospital of Sarasota is an acute care facility serving the healthcare needs of Sarasota County. Doctors Hospital is a Joint Commission certified advanced primary stroke center and a top performer in key quality measures. The facility is nationally recognized by Modern Healthcare's top 100 best places to work for 8 years in a row and is the only facility in Sarasota to receive an A grade in patient safety. For more information, please visit doctorsofsarasota.com.
There's a smarter, more efficient way to handle all of your workforce-related activities. PayServe Systems' Human Capital Management System provides intuitive, in-the-moment insights to help you organize, staff, and pay your workforce. Manage the full hire-to-retire lifecycle in one simple, easy-to-use system. The most important investment any business can make is in its people. Maximize your workforce ROI with PayServe Systems. Go to trypayserve.com today. That's TRYPAYSERV.com.
Accidents happen, and meeting by accident is never good when it's a car accident. Finding the right place to repair your vehicle is risky. Trusted by top insurance agencies, Dynamic Motor Car Center has a trained, certified staff of expert technicians. So when the unexpected happens, call Dynamic Motor Car Center, where quality service and value are not just words. Call them at 371-8844 and turn your meeting by accident into a safe bet.
Insurance coverage from Sile is personal. If you've ever wondered if you can get a better policy or if you can save money, no need to worry any longer. The professional qualified agents at Sile Insurance Group can help. It's not necessary to visit dozens of websites or make visits or calls to every agent in town. Sile's licensed staff can provide all the quotes because Sile has access to over 200 carriers, giving you access to the best. Come see why Sile is consistently recognized by the top-rated insurance companies in Florida. Quotes are fast, free, and easy.
easy to understand, making it possible for you to be sure you're getting coverage that meets your unique needs. Contact one of our representatives today and let us tailor a policy for you. If great coverage and pricing with less hassle interests you, call us 1-800-728-0988. Visit us www.sihle.com or visit wsrq.com to find us. It really can be fast and hassle-free to save money. At SIHLE, the difference is service.
You can stay connected with everything happening in Sarasota, Bradenton, and Venice by visiting our online stream at wsrqradio.com.
Welcome back to Health Check. I'm Heidi Godman. If you're just joining us, my guest today is Dr. Manjula Jegasothy. She's the founder of the Miami Skin Institute, and you can check that out at miamiskininstitute.com. And she is also a Harvard and Yale-trained aesthetic dermatologist. And we're going to be speaking now all about the safety of dyeing your hair. And Manjula, I have to tell you, even though I am sort of at an age where I would say I was mid-century modern, I've never dyed my hair. Yeah, it worked out well. I have blonde hair and I've gotten older. It's a bit gray. I've gotten some highlights every year, but that's about all I've ever had to do. Now it's sort of a gray blonde, but it's working for me. But I have,
it's
of course...
It's interesting. So many brunettes start out brunette in their 20s and then become blonde.
Yes.
Because of necessity.
Right. You know, but I have so many friends who have been dyeing their hair for years and years, and I know that it can be a concern as far as your health. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. I think, well, first of all, this starts with, you know, what's fashionable and what colors are fashionable when you're even in your teens and 20s. And so it really varies widely based on where you live and urban areas versus rural areas and such. And then, we know, when you start to go gray, what age that is. If it's in your late 20s, like my family, or in your mid-30s, then, you know, you're kind of not ready to embrace having gray hair amongst your black hair. So I'd say, you know, I think the numbers are right now at about 70 to 80% of women of all ages color their hair to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Not all year, but sometimes.
Sure. Now, are you including highlights, or are you only talking about hair dye?
No, highlights. You know, all kinds of things, frosting, you know, two tones, you know, ombres, every single kind of color that's applied to the hair shaft itself, and even perhaps because of that, the scalp.
Okay.
You know, most safety issues that arise from hair dyes are more related to the scalp than the hair shaft itself, unlike keratin treatments and other things which actually can damage, and bleach, which can actually damage the hair shaft itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm in the highlight category, and that's part of what we're talking about, I guess. So there are some risks involved with this. How does it affect the skin?
Okay, so basically there are two kinds of things that can happen. I mean, they're, for the most part, they're allergy-mediated, and number one is that, you know, the ingredients in the dye that being used, or the highlight or whatever, are inferior quality ingredients. They're things that we know are common allergens. And I think the best way to avoid that is to go to a colorist whom you trust. I think, you know, the colorist you go to and the color that they mix is often worth the price. I think you get what you pay for in this arena. You know, cheaper colorists tend to use cheaper ingredients in their color, and I think that tends to have a higher incidence of allergies, which can manifest as, you know, extreme rashes with crusting and erosions in the scalp, or even just mild tenderness and itchiness immediately after the dye for 3 to 5 days.
Okay, so there are some risks involved. But are there ways that you can get your hair to the color you want without risking any damage to your skin?
Right. So number one is, again, like I said, picking the right kind of colorist. If you're new or you're in another city and you want to do it, you know, take a look at the Yelp reviews. I always tell people, you know, online reviews have to be looked at with caution. But if somebody has a bunch of reviews where people say they've gotten allergies to the dye that they use, then don't go there. Somebody has a bunch of reviews, you know, I obviously look at the trends. So So if the trend's in a given place, even if it's a fancy, you know, nice place that seems to be, you know, has a good marketing program and all that, if you look at the reviews, the people that they've gotten, you know, a lot of bad reactions to the dye, then don't go there. That's number one, picking the right place. And nowadays with online reviews, that's become a lot easier when you don't know anyone to recommend you. The second thing is some people develop allergies after years of getting their hair done. This happened to my mother in her 50s. Essentially, what happens is you get sensitized to all forms of hair dye, all forms of color, so that your scalp is really itchy and tingly and burns and just, you know, sort of intolerable, prevents you from sleeping for, you know, a good up to 10 days after the dye. And then, you know, you have to dye every 3 weeks to keep it looking good. So you're basically spending half your life in scalp misery. So that's kind of where I wanted to talk about what are the dermatologist secrets to preventing this, because this problem is more common than you know.
Hmm.
And it's a sensitization to a dye that you never had a problem with before. So it's not your colorist's fault. It's just the way we are built, that if we have a chemical applied to us frequently over time, our immune systems get sensitized to it and sort of try to fight it off. That manifests, like I said, as itching and burning and tingling in the scalp and all over. And you have a tendency to scratch, and then that can get infected. You might get even little pimples in your scalp. All of those things could be signs of allergy after dye. So the main thing I tell people is to take an over-the-counter antihistamine, because all allergies are mediated by histamine. So take an over-the-counter antihistamine, such as Zyrtec, the night before you go for your coloring, or maybe even for 2 nights in a row before, and then for 2 nights in a row after. That will ratchet down your histamine levels and prevent this kind of allergy.
Terrific. All right. So you could take a little protective action initially. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's a preventive.
Pre and post-treat so that your histamine levels are low to begin with. If it's a bad allergy season for you, if you're sniffling and sneezing, or if you're having more asthma than you usually have, these are all carried by the same histamine receptors. So maybe you should avoid getting your hair done when you're particularly sneezing or your allergies are particularly acting up. Those are bad days to go. But if not, then if this pre and post-treat works very well. There's also a topical prescription form antihistamine if you don't want to take pills called Zonalon. It's Zonalon. It's a generic medication, and any doctor you have can prescribe it for you. You can apply that to your scalp right the day before and the day after, the day of your dye, your color job, and that should also help in terms of lowering histamine levels directly in the scalp.
And have you seen women go on to be able to get their hair dyed, but they can control their allergic reaction
yes.
to it? Yeah?
I mean, I've had, I'd say dozens of patients, and even my mother, who had kind of given up, and we're going to go gray, and we're very sad about it. And, you know, I've basically, you know, with this advice, have turned it around so that they can continue to get their hair dyed as long as they want. One other last tip, and many of the better colorists know this one. They put a packet of sweetenerl, saccharin, into the actual color mixer, and it desensitizes. It basically attaches to a lot of the molecules that are known allergens. And I find that also helps a lot of people who have this allergy problem.
Okay, very interesting. Terrific. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm sure you're giving a lot of people hope right now as they're listening. And if someone wants to know more about you and what you do, how could we find out?
Sure. You can look for me on the web at MiamiSkinInstitute.com. Look at my several blogs. I like to think that things I put online are the things that patients would like to hear but can't get to see me. They're either not in my area or, you know, my schedule's kind of full. So all of these things will give you these kinds of tips that we talk about on the radio show, the WordPress blog, the Google Plus blog, my Twitter feed, and even my Facebook page.
Terrific. And you're so media savvy. You have so many different ways that people can find out about you and what you're doing. So let me just tell everybody again, it's MiamiSkinInstitute.com. www.thehealthcarenetwork.com if you want to know more about Dr. Manjula Jagasothy and what she's doing. All right, Manjula, if you could please stick around, that'll be great. But meantime, everybody, we need to take a quick break for news and weather. When we come back, we're going to talk about the five things you should stop doing right now so that your eyelids don't age. This is Health Check with Heidi Godman on WSRQ. We'll be right back.
I'm Ravina. I'm 7 years old and I'm blind. You can help me live the life I want.
Help Ravina and other blind people by making a tax-deductible donation of your used car, truck, or almost anything with wheels to the National Federation of the Blind. Just call 855-659-9314 or visit carshelpingtheblind.org. That's carshelpingtheblind.org. And if you know a blind person who needs help, email nfb@nfb.org.
Doctors Hospital of Sarasota is an acute care facility serving the healthcare needs of Sarasota County. Doctors Hospital is a Joint Commission certified advanced primary stroke center and a top performer in key quality measures. The facility is nationally recognized by Modern Healthcare's top 100 best places to work for 8 years in a row and is the only facility in Sarasota to receive an A grade in patient safety. For more information, please visit doctorsofsarasota.com.
Welcome back to Health Check. I'm Heidi Godman. It's time now to talk about things you can stop doing so that your eyelids are going to stay younger looking. You know, when you're young, your eyelids, you're really not even thinking about these things. And then you get a little bit older and suddenly you notice one seems to have fallen or you know, something starts changing and you have upper eyelids and lower eyelids and things you'd never even thought about now become very important. So what do? My guest, Dr. Manjula Jagasothy, has some advice. So, Manjula, this is something that bothers so many people, men and women.
Definitely. I think it's probably the most commonly sought after procedure in my office by men. The eyelids are the thinnest skin on the body, and so therefore they're the first to actually start sagging or getting lines or showing the signs of age, even as early as our early 30s. The first two things I have that you can do that you should stop doing right away that will help your eyes not age are related to makeup. And number one, I'm sure you can guess, is don't sleep in your makeup, right?
Right.
So sleeping in your makeup causes the little dark organic matter, the color, whether it's a blue or black or a quartz, mica, et cetera, it causes those crystals to embed in the eyelid skin. And so then that can give you dark circles prematurely. So please take off your makeup every night.
I bet nobody knew that. I didn't know that. Very, very interesting. Okay. So you might want to take off your makeup at night so that you don't prematurely get circles under your eyes, dark circles. What else?
It's another reason to take off your makeup. Besides, everybody says it's not clean, it can give you pimples, et cetera. It can cause dark circles. Number two is if you are of certain ethnicities, Asian, Middle Eastern, Indian, it's a good idea, even though it's fashionable, to not put too much dark kohl, dark eyeliner, or even dark mascara on your lower lid. That tends to flake off through the course of the day and, again, can embed in that delicate under-eye area and give you dark circles or make your dark circles more pronounced.
Okay. All right. So you don't want to do that.
So I recommend white eyeliners and things like that in the lower lid and minimal mascara, maybe clear mascara. That
really?
That can be done, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you make your eyelashes look bigger, or even Latisse can make your eyelashes bigger, but without adding that extra color that can then damage the skin.
Okay.
Number three is never rub your eyes. And most people don't even realize chronic eye rubbers that I see in my office because they want their eyelids rejuvenated. And the first thing I do is I give them a little cortisone 10 because of allergies, just hay fever and things, they tend to have what we call allergy eyes. I'm sure you've seen it in the Claritin ads. Increased histamine levels cause them to have itchiness, and they tend to rub their eyes, and that can cause extreme aging of the eyelid skin very rapidly. So if you find you're doing that, reduce your histamine levels, perhaps by taking an antihistamine, but also using a mild cortisone cream along with your regular eye cream every night. And every morning if necessary.
Okay. All right. And number four?
And number four, when you do take your makeup off, I talked about number one, make sure that you do very gentle rubbing, coming off the makeup by solar water.
You know, you were breaking up. Manjula, you're breaking up just a little bit.
Sure.
What is number four again?
I haven't moved. Isler Waters, have you heard of that?
No, say it again.
They're micellar, micellar.
Okay.
Micellar Waters.
Okay.
They're very popular right now with the magazine crowd, and I think they're going to be huge soon. Basically new water-based makeup removers that do not require any rubbing or tugging of the face to wash the face of makeup. They can be used with cotton ball or tissue. They're made by L'Oreal and Garnier and very common drugstore brands. And that's what I would recommend in 2016 for eye makeup removal.
Okay.
Micellar Waters.
Micellar Waters. And it's really effective at getting the makeup off?
It's very effective. And, you know, and it's not greasy. It doesn't have a greasy feel and doesn't require any rubbing. That to me is the most important part. It emulsifies the makeup without your having to rub it off.
Terrific. But do you still recommend that people then wash their faces after makeup?
Yes, I would recommend, you know, you use this first and then you wash your face just to get off any residual traces, even of the cotton ball or the tissue and all of that too.
Okay.
But gently.
Okay.
Don't rub.
So the micellar water before you wash your face. All right. And then number five.
Number five, this got me a placement in Shape magazine this month, actually. If, you know, especially in Florida, if you're going to use goggles, swim goggles when you swim, make sure, or any kind of goggles for any reason, make sure that the sealant is off as far as possible outside on the bone around your eye, the orbital bone, and isn't really sucking the skin of your eyelid. It's also helpful if you can buy non-vacuum-based goggles. The vacuum-based goggles that tend to suck the skin will cause capillary breakage and damage of that sensitive skin and can cause premature eyelid aging as well.
Hmm. So with all of these things, are we mostly talking about the under eyelid?
It's both. It's upper and lower, and people often ignore the upper because that tends to age a little more slowly until the lower is really bad, and then they realize their upper is starting to droop too. It's a lot genetic too. Some people tend to have a good under eye area and tend to have a droopy upper eyelid, and that's pretty genetic.
Okay, so there are things all those things you mentioned we can be doing right now to try to prevent the aging. What about for people who are already there? Are there any things that they can do, or are there any treatments you can give that can help provide a younger, more youthful-looking eye area?
Sure. The sort of gold standard right now in 2016 is to do alternating treatments with the Fraxel laser, which smooths the skin, smooths wrinkles, and does a little bit of tightening, as well as lightens the under eye circles, or even if you have some color discoloration on the upper eyelid. I would alternate that roughly every 6 to 8 weeks with a radio frequency laser, which does nothing but tightening, but for a lot of people that's as necessary as smoothing.
And how many treatments does it take before you really notice a difference and get some younger looking eyelids?
I tell people typically each laser will improve your eyelids about 20 to 30%. So depending how bad they are, you know, an average of 2 to 3 sessions each maybe over the course of a year. And then after that, you're probably good to do maybe one or two sessions a year for maintenance. If we didn't age on an ongoing way, we would be able to do these lasers and then that would be it. But unfortunately, we continue to age.
Right, right. So you might need it for maintenance. And then the extreme cases would be blepharoplasty, right? With surgeon, with a plastic surgeon.
Yes, if your eyelids are so droopy that they're actually obstructing your vision, or, you know, if you basically, you know, you have a fat pad under your eye that's protruding, that, you know, that we call the under eye bag, that right now in 2016 is best treated with surgery.
Okay, all right. But hopefully there are things that you can do without surgery, or if you wanted to get some sort of procedure, it could be sort of a non-invasive thing that you're talking about with the lasers. And those lasers, yes, they could be used all over the face for different things, right?
Absolutely. They can, you know, most people first come because of their eyelids, and as I said, the men notice it too. And then they, you know, we're seeing it's helping with, you know, those lines, those vertical lines on the cheek. I call them the accordion cheek lines. It can tighten those. It's great. Fraxel's great for smoothing the line around the lip. If you don't want to do filler there and have your lips look bigger, it's a great alternative. Really for anybody who is not interested in injectables, and there are quite a few people out there who aren't interested in, you know, having needles in their face, you know, every so often, then these lasers are great alternatives. And they also carry with them very little downtime. You might be red for a few hours, and by the next day, you're usually fine.
And then what about how long the effects last? I mean, for people who do have the lip lines or the accordion lines that you're talking about.
It depends. If I get them to a place, like I said, you know, if they're bad, then it may take 2 to 3 treatments, or sort of average is 1 to 2 treatments. And then they, you know, if the reason they have the lip lines is because they smoke or because they enunciate their words in a way that purses their lips, then that's an ongoing issue that I'm not going to fix. So they will need maintenance. If it's just a genetic tendency, they may not need as much maintenance. But as I said, those things are sort of aging factors that continue to progress as we get older. So if you want to keep up the results of any of these lasers, you probably do need at least 1 to 2 maintenance treatments every year after that.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for spending so much time with us today. All this wonderful expert advice, and for free, everybody. How about that? You get in to see a fabulous in-demand aesthetic dermatologist for free just by listening today. Manjula, tell us how we can find out more about what you do.
I wanted to talk to everyone about our iTunes channel. It's so exciting. It's up. All you have to do is search Heidi Godman or Health Check with Heidi Godman, or my name, Dr. Manjula Jegasothy, or Miami Skin Institute. And if you enjoyed this radio program, you can find so many more like this on our iTunes channel.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you, Manjula. That's so fun and exciting. All right, great talking to you as always, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Wonderful. Have a great day.
You too. Take care. All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it'll be time for our weekly Brain Boost with Dr. Dean Sutherland. This is Health Check with Heidi Godman on WSRQ.